Hi, and welcome to the Dr. Phil Show. Today we have a very interesting program. There's been, you know, issues that I've been seeing a lot of people talk about, parents in particular, about, you know, transgenderism in America. And I will say I'm not too well versed on this. So I decided to bring on what could be considered a transgender expert here. We got Wilhelmina Witt here. Wilhelmina, can you first explain to the audience how you identify?
I identify as a woman.
Oh, that's great, Wilhelmina. And can you please, for the audience, not for me, for the audience, explain what a woman is?
Well, audience, I actually can't define what a woman is. It's whatever you want it to be.
I'm just not quite understanding how you can identify as a woman and not know what a woman is.
Well, you don't understand it because you're a transphobic bigot.
Excuse me, young lady.
Look at him interrupting. Listen, if you're not a woman or transgender, then you can't tell me what a woman is.
Okay. And you know what, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not typically rude, but we're going to have to cut this program short. Young lady, if I can call you that.
No.
I'm sending you to the ranch immediately.
I'm sending you to the ranch.
You can get out of the ranch when you identify what a woman is, okay?
I don't know what a woman is.
Scene. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Will and Amala Live. Was that too far off from what we saw in Dr. Phil last week? Probably not. If you guys watched the show at all last week, we reviewed Matt Walsh on Dr. Phil, talking about his stance on transgender ideology on a sort of uneven playing ground against two people who identify as non-binary and then an expert in the field of transgenderism, I'm assuming, or a parent. So we needed to bring on Matt Walsh to sort of talk this through, talk about his experience on the Dr. Phil show and other issues. So here's that interview.
Guys, and before we get to that, remember, we have a new YouTube channel that you guys can subscribe to, the Will and Amala channel, where soon we will exclusively be streaming on there. So make sure that you are subscribed to that channel. You're liking all the videos, chatting on there really helps us out. And make sure that if you're watching this today, you are liking it, you're sharing it with your friends, dropping your comments down below. And if you're catching this anywhere else, make sure you are listening to this on Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts. All right, let's get into the interview.
Hi, everybody. Very special guest on the show today. You saw his face on our show last week because we reacted to his appearance on Dr. Phil. You also know him from being a host at The Daily Wire and being a children's bestseller now. We have Matt Walsh. Matt, thank you so much for being on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Of course.
Talk a little bit about the reaction from the Dr. Phil. Has it been mostly positive, mostly negative? I mean, I've been just looking at your Twitter and seeing people very split on this. What has the reaction been from your point of view?
You know, honestly, it's been surprisingly, overwhelmingly positive from what I've seen. I mean, I expected more of a clear split between left and right. And of course, you know, a lot of the liberals are mad, but just looking, even I looked recently at Dr. Phil's own YouTube page, and not that it's a scientific view of it necessarily, but it seems even there, majority of the comments are kind of on my side. So it's been more overall positive than I expected. So I'm somewhat encouraged for the first time in a while by that.
What about from conservatives? Has it been pretty clear cut on that? Pretty much all the conservative side is supporting you, or has there been much disagreement there?
Not that I've seen. I mean, and that's not because conservatives usually are very happy to criticize me if they see a reason or opening. But right. At least when it comes to discussion actually on Dr. Phil itself, I think that if you're conservative and you found any reason to criticize the notion that, you know, women can give birth and men have penises, which is basically what I'm arguing, then you really have to look within yourself. So it's been, you know, there hasn't been much of that I've seen.
I'm curious. One of the big sort of gotcha moments in your appearance was when you asked them to describe what a woman was, and they had a really, really hard time giving you a definition for that. Why do you think the transgender community and those that support that community have such a hard time defining what it means to be a woman?
Well, it's just the fundamental incoherence of their position, I think, that, you know, this goes down to there's this tension really that you find with what they were saying about quote unquote gender. And that's why I think it's important, by the way, when we talk about this, then this is what I tried to clarify on the show, that we use these words gender and sex kind of interchangeably. But for most of human history, and especially in the English language, you would have just talked about sex, male and female. Gender is a linguistic term. And only in the last, 60 or 70 years have we decided that people also have genders as well. But then if you look at it, it's interesting, for decades after that point, we were told that, gender is a social construct, and really it's something that we have to kind of break down and get away from. But now what you hear from the trans advocates and from the trans agenda is that, well, if a boy partakes in the artificial construct of femininity, then that means that he actually is a girl. And so they actually are giving, they're giving more weight to the so-called social construct than anyone ever did before. And so that's just the incoherence of the view, where they're holding these different ideas that don't really work together. And all you have to do is start pulling at that thread a little bit, and it all just kind of collapses.
Why the big push? I mean, why is it such a stark issue right now that so many people get so vitriolic about? I mean, seeing the reaction from these people who you were on the show with getting so absolutely angry. I mean, and you talked about on your show about these people's intentions, and you weren't entirely sure if these people had the best intentions with what they were doing. Do you think that most of these people who believe this have good intentions and they're trying to help the world and make it into this more progressive place where people can be free to be whatever gender they want? Or do you think that it is for more of the selfish, egotistical intentions where this is something to make themselves feel good?
Yeah, no, I think they have evil intentions for sure. I don't think that they're good intentions here at all. I also don't believe that most of the people who claim to believe this actually do. Which is why they can't even begin to defend it. I mean, I'm sorry, I just don't believe that. There might be a very small minority of people who are, mentally ill and just basically crazy and really do think that, for example, men can give birth. But I think that portion of people is very, very, very small. There's a much greater portion that are actually pushing these ideas, and I don't think they really believe it. And I do think that it's evil intentions. And when I say evil intentions, by the way, I'm not talking about from like these are supervillain comic book characters where in their own heads they're telling themselves, oh, I'm evil, and so I want to do an evil thing. That's not how evil people operate in the real world. So when I say evil intentions, what I really mean are selfish intentions, where you're worried about yourself and you don't really care about the cost. And I talked about, we talked about in Dr. Phil, and a lot of this part of this conversation was cut, and I think a lot of that was just for time. They cut a lot of stuff. But we talked quite a bit about the problem of girls being sexually assaulted in the bathroom. And also, and this whole portion was cut from the program, we also talked about women being raped in prisons by males who are put into female prisons. This is a big problem, and it's happening. And, I brought this up to the other side, and there's no other way to put it than they just don't care. They just don't. For them, that is a cost worth paying, as long as they get their way ideologically and they get to feel better about it. And I don't know how else to describe that other than evil. I mean, if you're okay with girls getting raped in a bathroom or a woman being locked in a prison cell with a male sex offender, if you're okay with that, it's just not possible to have good intentions and it result in that.
Yeah,
it's one thing to be ignorant. It's one thing to be ignorant and not know the information about what's going on. It's a whole nother thing to see what's happening in front of you and say, my agenda is greater than these people's lives. That's what it really boils down to.
Yeah, and I think we got into a healthy debate on the show over that use of the word evil and whether or not that pertains to people like that. Because typically, I used to be a former leftist and I'm also a woman. So I tend to be the more compassionate out of the two of us when it comes to our show. And I tend to think that the people on the ground here that are pushing this transgender ideology do not have evil intentions, or in many ways, like Will would say, are ignorant to what their ideology and what their push for that ideology truly means in the real world. But I'm curious, what else got cut from your interview? Because if I had seen the parts where you talked about, women being abused and these women in prisons, I think that might have influenced the way that I looked at the two people you were talking to.
Yeah, there was a lot. It was mainly a big, and I'm trying to remember everything that was in because it was a longer conversation and things get cut down. By the way, when I say things are cut, I'm not accusing Dr. Phil's people of doing it for ideological reasons. Actually, I think I kind of went into it expecting that I didn't know what was going to happen, but I found them to be quite fair, and I was impressed by that. But like I said, things just get, it's a long conversation. They cut things out because they stuff in a lot of commercials. It was a lot of that about the sexual assault. And then there was also an exchange that I had with the mother at the end, who's raising a quote unquote genderless child, where I asked her, you know, would you, because she was bragging about the fact that she's going to let her child choose his own gender. And I said, well, would you let him choose his own race also? And if not, why? And she said she wouldn't dignify that question with an answer. And they cut that part too, unfortunately. So, but it was mainly the things about sexual assault. And this is a conversation, of course, that's happened a lot. And I brought this up quite a bit to the other side. And they're not going to come out and just say it like this. But the reality is that they know that it happens. You can't deny that it happens. It is happening. And so it's just a cost, and they think it's worth paying. And also, even getting aside, I brought this point up too. I can't remember if I made it into the final cut or not, but we could talk about the women who are physically abused, and that happens. Much more common though, you have women and girls who are really uncomfortable sharing these intimate spaces with men. And they're saying, even if nothing's happened to them physically, they just are really uncomfortable with it. They don't like it. They feel like their privacy is being infringed on. And what the other side tells us is that, well, you feel that way. But on the other hand, we have this small minority of trans people, and it would make them feel bad if they're not allowed into these spaces and their feelings take priority over yours.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing with them telling me that I'm transphobic because I don't want to date a trans
right.
woman.
Yeah.
It's like, that makes absolutely no sense. You're putting those people's feelings above the feelings that have been constant in humanity for the last, what, 2,000 years, something like that? What has been the main strategy when you've seen this and talked to people? I'm curious if your clip and all of this have been able to change people's minds. Have you heard from people and said, I watched the clip on Dr. Phil, I watched you and your arguments, and it turned me to the other side, or at least opened up my mind to some sort of new way of thinking? Have you seen a lot of that?
I think when it comes to this issue, if you're talking to someone who's fully invested in it, like the people that I was on stage with, you're not going to change their mind in an instant in one conversation. I never had any illusion that there's anything that I could have said that would make the guy with the dress and the beard just say, you know what, you're right, never mind, and give up. So that's not going to happen. All you could do with that is just maybe plant some seeds, hopefully, that will sprout into rational thought later in life. I think what the people that we can really reach are just normal people who are not intensely ideological, who do understand the difference between males and females, but they find themselves suddenly living in a culture where everywhere they go, this other viewpoint is being shoved down their throats and they're being berated constantly, that they have to abandon everything that they thought they knew about biology and science and reality. And I think there are a lot of people like that who they know the truth, but they're starting to feel kind of confused and bewildered by it. And so I think those are people who you can pull back from the brink and you can say, no, you were right. You're right about this. And it's that's okay. And this is the right view. And I think those are the people that we're hopefully reaching. It's sort of like you're giving people permission to just have common sense and be sane, I suppose.
Right. And I think where a lot of conservatives tend to jump in on the issue is when it starts to affect children, which we've been seeing now across the nation in public schools, children being taught about this gender theory and sexual identity at really inappropriate ages. Now, you came out with a book called Johnny the Walrus, and it's funny because when you Google search it, it says Johnny the Walrus, best-selling LGBTQ author. So I think that's hilarious. What do you think we can do to stop this ideology being taught to our children in schools? What should parents be doing? What should educators be doing?
Well, parents, fortunately, there are a lot of parents already doing the right thing. And I think number one, the best thing that you can do if you're able to do it is to get your kids out of the public school system, get them out of the government school system entirely, and rescue them from it, because we're not at a point where we can trust the government school system. We'll never be able to trust the government school system, because the government school system exists to condition children to be the sorts of people that the powers that be want them to be. That's why the government school system exists. So that's the best thing you could do. And we are seeing that trend more and more, where homeschooling is becoming more and more popular. I think through the shutdowns and everything, with the school system shutting down, all they did was prove to a lot of parents that, you know what, we don't actually need you. I can do this myself. That's the best thing. But unfortunately, there are people who because of their financial situation, they're not able to stay home or whatever, and so they have to send their kids into the school system right now. And if you have to, then the next best thing to do is to be very, very involved and to want to know, to demand to know every single thing your kid's being taught. And we're seeing that with the school board movements across the country. Because once this stuff is exposed and once it's out there in the open, I think people really start to understand, you know, how bad it is.
I think the left has overplayed their hand. I think that when it comes to these mandates, when it comes to the gender theory, all of the other nonsense that they push for, they've overplayed their hand and pushed it so heavily that they've turned normal people into these type of activists that you talked about, people who are now going to homeschool their kids or go to rallies or go to their school board meetings. Do you think that the left, their narrative is collapsing in a way that is going to potentially change the culture? Or do you think that it's so pervasive and so extraordinary that it's going to continue to do more and more damage?
I think it kind of remains to be seen. It really is up to it's up to the sane normal people to take a stand and say we're not going to cooperate with this. And there's been signs like at school board meetings that people are willing to do that. But the reality is that you look around the country, and although most people seem to know how crazy this is, it's still happening. I mean, I think if you were to talk to almost anybody on the street, and especially if they thought, you know, that they were talking privately to you, and you would ask them, should males be allowed to compete against females in women's sports? I mean, almost everybody. I don't think I've ever met in just normal everyday conversation a person who actually thinks that we should do that. And yet it's still happening, though, everywhere, because although people know how crazy it is, they've been berated into silence. And so all it takes is just to stop remaining silent. The other thing, though, is that, you know, you've got two different groups here. You have the adults who were raised in a culture that wasn't perfect, but at least for most of their formative years, everybody knew that men were men and women were women at the very least. So you have those adults, but then you also have children. And children, you know, at a very young age, you can easily convince a three-year-old that a magical fat man flies through the air and comes down a chimney to deliver presents, because children have no... they're not able to distinguish between fantasy and reality, you know, and they're a lot easier to indoctrinate, the left has found. So I think that's their gambit right now, is they're saying, well, a lot of you older people, you're hopeless. We're not going to be able to get to you. But these kids, if we can shove this into their minds relentlessly through all of their formative years, then they're going to be ours. They're going to be sufficiently conditioned. And so that's why we have to prevent that.
Right. And I think we're seeing a great schism happen in America of people who support progressivism and progressive policy, and then those who want to maintain that traditional conservative roots that the country was founded on. And you guys made a statement, Daily Wire, in recently moving from Los Angeles to Nashville. I'm wondering, how has the move been and how's your new state?
I think it's been great. Now, I actually, most everyone here, yeah, they came from Los Angeles. I was actually living in rural Pennsylvania in like a one stop sign town in Amish country. And so while everyone from Los Angeles, they're talking about how this is, you know, it's a much more laid back environment and everything. For me, it's kind of the opposite adjustment. But overall, it has been, I mean, I think it's been great. And the people here are very, very welcoming. And it kind of shows you, I've traveled around the country, and, you know, this is one place where most of the people you run into are friendly to us and are appreciative of the fact that we're here. And most people, even through the pandemic, seem to have retained their sanity. So it's been a positive experience, I'd say.
What do you think about California? I mean, knowing that the Daily Wire was from here, do you think that a state like California is a lost cause, or somewhere like DC or New York, Chicago? Do you think that these places can be saved? Because, I mean, every single day we're on the fence here at PragerU about what we're supposed to do. You know, if we're supposed to leave or if we're supposed to stay and fight. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it is a lost cause. At the very least, I don't think that we as conservatives should be trying to save it. I'm not really sure why we would. You know, during the recall election and the recall effort in California, there were a lot of people very excited about the idea, well, can we get a Republican governor in California? And my point all along was, well, why would you want a Republican governor in California? Why would you want a Republican to be the one overseeing this mountain of filth and decay? I mean, why would you want them to ultimately be the ones responsible for it? This is a mess that the Democrats have created. And unfortunately, lots of Democrat voters, this is apparently what they want, and they're getting it. And so if it's going to change, I think it's going to be up to the Democrats to do that. I don't think conservatives should expend much energy trying to save essentially the left from itself. I just don't think that that's energy well spent. I think it's probably a futile effort.
Yeah, I mean, if you're in a burning house, what do you do? Do you try and put the house out with water from your sink, or do you leave the burning house? I mean, that's what it's really come down to.
It's very true. I want to switch gears here just a little bit because I would be remiss if I didn't ask you this. We ask all the married men that come on this program for advice on dating. We have a lot of young people who watch this show, and you put out a show yesterday describing the dating scene in America as a toxic wasteland. And every single week we do an advice column where young girls and guys write in about how much they're struggling with dating and in the current state of the dating scene right now. What is your advice to those people as a happily married man?
Just become monks, move into the woods and be hermits. I'm half kidding. I think if I was still single, that's probably what I would have done by now. I thank God that I'm married. It does feel like I said yesterday, speaking of burning houses, as a married person, I feel like I just escaped the burning house and I'm turning back and watching it collapse behind me. But you know, that's for people who are actually on the dating scene. I think there's a few things here. Maybe the number one most important thing is to go into dating with a goal in mind, with an endpoint in mind. And this has been the problem with quote unquote with modern dating, you know, ever since it was first conceived. Because if you go back 100 years ago, nobody was talking about dating, there was courtship. That's what we would refer to. A lot of other cultures had even things like arranged marriages. This modern idea of dating is relatively just that, modern. And what distinguishes it from courtship is that with dating, there's no necessary endpoint in mind. You're just kind of like doing it. You're just sort of hanging out and talking to someone and then walking along randomly with no direction. And then eventually you just part ways. And so it's kind of doomed from the start. So I think you should go into it knowing that, listen, it doesn't mean that the first person I date, I'm going to marry them. But that is, it's a tryout period. You know, it's like a job interview. And I'm seeing if this is someone who I would want to spend the rest of my life with. And the moment that I determine that they aren't, then you part ways right then. Whether it's an hour into it or a year into it, the moment you realize I could not spend the rest of my life with this person because whatever the reason is, we don't share our fundamental values, whatever it is, that's when it ends right there. And then you move on, you try to find the next person. Now, I realize that it becomes more difficult, even if you go into dating with a goal in mind like that, and you have this kind of goal-oriented dating, it can be hard to find other people who are approaching it the same way. That's the mm-hmm. challenge, but at least you know what you're looking for if you have that in mind.
Great. Yeah, guys, date with intention. I get so many girls who, like you said in this episode about West Elm Caleb, they were so upset that this man ghosted him. And it just is very clear that he was had no intention of seeing a long-term relationship with you, and he probably let you off early.
If you get the cow and the milk for free, that's the way that you're going to act. I mean, there's a lot of cultural problems in America that make all of this happen. Matt, if you had to say the main values that are missing from America and the West in general today, what would you say are the things that we need to return to, or the values that we need to restore?
All of them. Yeah. The main problem with I don't even know what we call it the main problem, but one of the fundamental problems with our culture is that there are no fundamental values at all, really. I mean, that's one of the reasons why we talk about is America going to break apart? Is there going to be a civil war? I don't think there's going to be a civil war, but I do think that in order to be, you know, we're the United States of America, allegedly, in order to be really united, you have to be united around something. And in other cultures throughout history, they were, you know, what bound them together was shared religion or ethnicity or those sorts of things. That's never been the case really in America. What's supposed to bind us together, unite us, is shared fundamental values. But we don't really have that anymore. I think if you get 100 people, 100 Americans into a room and ask them, what do they care most about in life? You're not going to find any majority agreement at all. I think that's sort of the basic problem in America.
Do you think there's a way to reinvigorate those virtues and something that we could do sooner rather than later? Because it seems like in the short term, things are going to get a lot worse before we see them get any better. What can you do now to reinvigorate those ideas?
Well, yeah, you keyed in on it when you said short term. I think that's kind of the point. And people don't like this answer when I give it. But and I'm not trying to be discouraging, although so much of what I say ends up being discouraging. That's not really my intention. It's just that I don't think there is a short-term solution. I don't think it exists. There's not a switch that we can flip that's going to make everything better. There's not a five-point sort of plan, five-step plan we can follow. I know we like to, as Americans, we always look for those kinds of answers with any problem that we're facing. This is one that doesn't have it. I mean, you look at how did we get to this point as a culture? How long did it take? It took generations to get here. So it's going to take generations to get out. And what that means is that if there's any kind of saving our civilization, reinvigorating our culture, anything like that, revival, I'm not going to be around to see it. You guys aren't going to be around to see it. My kids probably, sadly, won't be around to see it. Maybe my kids' kids will. And so we have to look at it from a long-term perspective. You know, we are rebuilding from the ground up, generationally. And that might seem depressing on one hand, but it's also sort of freeing on the other hand. Like, just accept that you're in this fight for your whole life, and you're not going to see the end of it. And your job is just a fight. That's what it is. And embrace that and march forward, I guess.
Well, when you say discouraging, you say it's going to take people so long, and this will be a next generation, not even next generation, the generation after that. Do you think that gives people really the motivation to go and fight? If they say this isn't even going to affect me in my lifetime or even my children's lifetime, what sort of, you know, motive is that for someone to go and fight and do things if it has no effect on their greater life?
Well, if we don't care about the future, if we don't care about our legacy, if we don't care about our families down, you know, in our down the line, in our progeny, if we don't care about those things, then there's just no hope at all. We might as well give up. I mean, it may seem discouraging to talk this way to people in modern culture, where we're always looking, like I said, for instant solutions. We live in the microwave culture. We want dinner to be ready in 60 seconds or less. But that's not, it hasn't always been that way. I mean, there was a time, I think probably most of human history, when people were very motivated by, they were willing to suffer and die in their own lives for the idea of what the future might be, to build something better for their children and grandchildren all down the line. I mean, they were thinking thousands of years into the future is what they cared about. And that's the only way to have a thriving civilization, is if you care about the long-term future. If you don't, then there's simply no hope. So we have to look at it that way. We have to find a way to care about that, or I don't see any other hope.
I was on Twitter this weekend, and there are some people who I guess you could say are more liberal, and they say something that's kind of conservative, something that's been said by conservatives for months and months, and basically all these mainstream conservatives are jumping on and just congratulating these types of people. And it seems like for conservatives, like, we are not winning in that cultural war, and that is why we take these people who are liberals and jump on everything they say like it's the greatest thing ever. And so one of the final questions to you today is what can conservatives do better, and what should they really be aiming for? Because it seems like just the conservative messaging that you see on social media, that you see on these news stations, or even in the Republican Party, any of this, it's just not doing it for our country.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And Barry Weiss was one example of Real Time, and she said some things about the pandemic the lockdowns and all that. And conservatives were hailing her as a hero. We tend to do this. There was a time when we were hoisting Nicki Minaj up on our shoulders and saying she's our conservative champion. I don't even remember what she said now, but she said one thing, and we were so taken by it.
Something about getting COVID with some medical testicles. Thing with your testicles with COVID questioning it. You know, something very odd.
Something really important like that. I think we have to be smarter about it. And there's nothing wrong with, forming an alliance, a kind of strategic alliance with a person or a group of people, because you have one particular goal in mind that you're trying to accomplish. And so if one of them is to stop all the dystopian, draconian COVID measures, then absolutely, march alongside anybody else who shares that goal. But you have to understand that they're not part of the larger kind of struggle, and you have to be able to sort of compartmentalize it that way, which I don't think we've been very good at doing. I mean, talking about Dr. Phil, I've had feminists, like left-wing feminists, get in touch with me. And are very happy about it. And, they want to link arms and join forces to fight this fight on gender. And that's a very new experience for me to have feminists saying anything nice to me whatsoever. And hey, if this is about rescuing a little bit of sanity when it comes to the topic of biological sex, I'll march alongside anybody for that. But I'm not under any illusion that we have some kind of partnership now that extends beyond this one issue.
Yeah, that's how it was for me this weekend. I spoke at that Defeat the Mandates rally in D.C., and obviously I'm more conservative, but the person who came after me was a Black Lives Matter guy. Obviously, I don't agree with basically anything this guy believes in, but he was against the mandates. And it's like, all right, for this one thing, we can put aside our differences here and say, all right, we are against these mandates, but in the greater picture, we have to understand that there is something bigger, and we're not just going to herald anyone who comes over to believe the things that we do as new heroes of our side or anything.
That's the right approach. It's just about being smart and strategic, which, like I said, as conservatives, we haven't always been the best at strategic thinking, I think, and we have to get better at that.
Fantastic. Well, Matt, I want to thank you so much for being on our show. We like to end this on a motivating note. So what's your message of motivation to the people, specifically the young people watching this, and how can people support you and find you?
Motivational message? I guess I should rap on something motivational after all this. Yeah,
this is by far the hardest question Matt's had to answer in a long time.
That's always, it's always, can you find something positive to say? That's always going to be the hardest question.
Yeah.
You know what? I'll jump right over to where you can find me is on Twitter at Matt Walsh Blog. And you can find me on YouTube as well, Matt Walsh. And Dale
fantastic. Good.
That was pretty motivational.
Yeah. But find me.
Yeah. That was great.
And follow me, and we'll make a better tomorrow.
No, but people need to see the discouraging things. It's all the messaging about, oh, everything's fine, everything's positive. When you see that, then it makes you content. It makes you not want to fight. So the fact that you go out, I'm actually kind of on the same side as you, that it's like you need to show people the evil things or the bad things happening all the time so that they feel motivated to go and do something.
Amen.
Amen, brother. Hey, well, we appreciate you coming on the show. Everyone, make sure you're checking out Matt Walsh on Daily Wire, all of his social media, everything he's got going on.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
What a great guy Matt is, really taking a stand. I wonder if he anticipated being as famous as he is now.
He's really shot up in the last year.
Really?
You know, someone who was kind of, Ben Shapiro was the Daily Wire. When people thought of Daily Wire, they thought of Ben Shapiro. And now he's really making an impact, which is really cool to see, because I love seeing people who get that type of attention who are so strong about what they believe in.
You know, right.
I think it's showing a shift in the culture of conservatism and just politics and culture in general.
Yeah, and he's really one of those conservatives that continues to mic drop on Twitter. So good for him.
Yes.
Guys, now we're going to get into Throwback Thursday, which is our Thursday segment. We do it every single week on the show. And today is my Throwback Thursday. Whoop, whoop. So I decided, I like to do Throwback Thursdays that particularly pertain to the day in history that we're talking about. Today's January 27th. And guess what? On January 27th, 1880, Thomas Edison patented the electric lamp / incandescent light bulb. So I wanted to focus on my Throwback Thursday on American innovation and someone who I think was an exemplary American in his time in this country. And that is Thomas Edison. So really, really crazy to have patented the electric lamp / light bulb at this time. Now, a lot of people give pushback to Thomas Edison because a lot of his inventions were works on other people's innovations. So the light bulb, many of you might not know because we all credit Thomas Edison with inventing it, was already invented before he patented it in January 27th. So what he actually did was created a light bulb that lasted more than just a few hours and used a different mechanism. And he was very famous for taking other people's innovations and just simply making them better, which I'm sure made a lot of people upset.
Yeah, I'll keep going with your thing. I have some thoughts about Thomas Edison.
Yeah, a lot of people look back on him now and call him something called a patent troll, meaning that he simply looked at what other people were creating and made it better. But let's do a little bit of a deeper dive into Thomas Edison. So Thomas Edison had thousands and thousands of patents put in his name. I believe, maybe not thousands and thousands, I believe he got to 1,098 before dying. There are six key inventions that Thomas Edison is credited with. These six inventions are the automatic telegraph, which allowed you to send messages. Again, there was a telegraph before. He simply made it better. He created the carbon telephone transmitter, which again, telephones were created. He just created a better system for that. The light bulb, the phonograph, which allowed you to listen to voice messages and to music, which look at how far we've come from the phonograph today. And then the movie camera and viewer, which a lot of people don't think about and don't attribute to Thomas Edison, but he's the reason you guys get to watch movies now and be entertained. Also, the alkaline storage battery, which cars, we did have electric cars back in that day. A lot of people didn't know that either, but they functioned on batteries that were often getting corroded. So Thomas Edison recognized this and said, we need a better, lighter battery to put in these cars, and created the alkaline storage battery. Now, I want to talk about his achievements. So Thomas Edison coined the name, or was known in his town as, the Wizard of Menlo Park for all of his creations and the things that he was doing. And he received over 1,000 U.S. patents through the U.S. patent system, which a lot of people criticize for, like I said, him quote unquote stealing ideas, but I would see that as innovating on them. And the first patent that he ever filed was in October 13th of 1868, when he was only 21 years old. I'm 21 now, and I can't think about ever inventing something. It's so crazy to look back at men during this day and age and what they were doing and philosophizing and creating, when the 21-year-olds of our time are considerably less intelligent and less involved in innovation and creation. Now, next one here, I want to talk about a couple quotes that pertain to Thomas Edison that I think are really important, and just things that we can carry in our daily lives when we're going through failures or struggles. He's a really good person to look at. So he's famously known for not seeing failure as failure, which I think is a really good tool that people can use in their lives. And here's a quote from him. I have not failed 10,000 times. I have not failed once. I've succeeded in proving that those 10,000 ways will not work. When I have eliminated the ways that will not work, I will find the way that will work. And that's the way that we should be looking at our achievements and at science in this nation and worldwide, is that when you fail at things or you don't do something correctly, you should see that as an achievement, because you've eliminated that way of thinking or that way of going about this certain issue. So often people fail at something that they're trying to accomplish or they're aspiring to, and they immediately throw in the towel and think, what else can I do now? Thomas Edison failed thousands and thousands of times in creating this invention, but with persistence and with eliminating different possibilities, he was able to create over 1,000 U.S. patents. So that's something to keep in mind when we're trying to be motivated, and I think that's a really good place to look. He's also quoted was saying, genius is 1% inspiration, 99% perspiration. So work hard for the things that you want to accomplish, and inspiration can only get you so far. Last quote here from Mr. Thomas Edison. When you have exhausted all possibilities, remember this, you haven't. And that's my throwback Thursday.
Right, no, he exhausted all possibilities in destroying Nikola Tesla. Yeah, I do not like Thomas Edison.
Will was having a hard time holding.
I was waiting the whole time. No, I think Thomas Edison is a hack, and he essentially tried to destroy Tesla's career, which he basically did, because Nikola Tesla's alternating current was better than the direct current that Thomas Edison had developed. Mm-hmm. Right, and now we use alternating current in everything. Everybody knows alternating current loses less electricity than direct current. And Thomas Edison hated this and did everything in his power to destroy Tesla. Mm-hmm. And Tesla was doing things not for money, not for anything. You know, he wasn't trying to take over patents to earn royalties like Thomas Edison did, which made him incredibly rich. Nikola Tesla was a true inventor and visionary of his time. You know?
I think none of that negates.
I think
his
it does.
Contributions.
But listen, no, I Thomas Edison did good things. There's no denying that he did some good things and was someone who is admirable in many ways, but he also did a lot of very bad things and took advantage of people. And to someone like Nikola Tesla, who was selfless in many ways, an absolute genius, like basically a human calculator, who was doing things for, you know, hate to use this word, but for the greater good, because he wasn't doing them selfishly. He was doing everything practically selflessly. I mean, Nikola Tesla died in a hotel room alone with no money after, mm-hmm. you know, spending all of his money to do things for humanity. All Edison wanted to do was destroy Tesla.
I think there are so many historical figures that we look at, and history does lack nuance in a lot of ways, which is why I don't believe in the hero archetype as it pertains to anybody historically. I think we can look at any historical figure and go into their past and pinpoint a time that they've done something wrong or done something that people maybe nowadays would describe as evil. But I think it in no way negates the innovation that this man has created or the world change that others have created. We look back at Lincoln or at MLK or at the Dalai Lama, and these are people that we herald as being amazing men of strength and heroism, and we can look back and pinpoint times in their careers and in their lifetimes that they have done horrible things, not so much with Lincoln, but definitely with MLK and the Dalai Lama and Mother Teresa, people who we herald today. And I think that in no way negates what they've given to our society and what they've done, which is an interesting debate.
Right. I'm just more worried about the Tesla doesn't get the same amount of credit as Edison.
I don't know. I think Tesla's pretty widely recognized, especially within the scientific community and the innovative community. But I think there's like it's how we view history. So like I said, one of the major problems with the way that we view history, but it's not a problem, it's natural, is that it lacks nuance. Of course, if you're looking over a span of hundreds of thousands of years, you're going to attach yourself to certain people that stick out to you. And certain people are going to overshadow others. There were so many civil rights activists that were doing work just as important as what MLK was doing, but we focus on MLK. There were so many people like the Dalai Lama, but we focus on the Dalai Lama. Because again, we attach ourselves to these archetypes of what it means to be a hero. And we herald these people and we give them their day or their month of celebration. But there will always be forgotten people in history. And where there's a Nikola Tesla and a Thomas Edison, there is millions of other inventors that we will never, ever talk about. But I think their contributions still should be recognized. Right. Yeah.
I'm just a big, yeah.
You're just a big Thomas Edison hater.
I am a hater. I am a Thomas Edison hater. I'm a Nikola Tesla stan.
I think if
Thomas
we
Edison hater.
Yeah, I just think if we went back and looked at every single hero that we talk about today, there is something to find wrong. There is some betrayal upon another person or something even horrendous that they've done. With MLK specifically, I keep going back to this example because I think he really exemplifies this sort of unnuanced history take that we have. MLK did a lot of horrible things in his day and age. The way that he treated his wife Coretta, being involved in the rape of a woman, which you guys can go and look up. He did actively watch this happen to another woman. But when we look at MLK, we don't talk about those things, and we just paint him as this visionary who was all good and had only good intentions in his heart and never did something wrong. And that's just, I think, the rose-colored goggles that we put on when we view historical figures.
Yeah, I'm just saying that Tesla, when you do look back in history, mm-hmm. I mean, Tesla really was an upstanding guy. Like that hero thing we're talking about right now, sure. Like it's not like an MLK, because mm-hmm. Tesla really was a very good guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, he was a fantastic guy. He worked for Thomas Edison, mm-hmm. and he went and asked Edison. Thomas Edison promised Tesla money for completing this project. Mm-hmm. And when Tesla went and asked Edison for the money, he didn't give it to him.
Right.
And it's like total, you're a bad guy for doing that, Edison.
Oh, yeah. I think it's, so everybody's done bad things.
No, of course.
I'm hesitant to label somebody as a bad person because I can think of things that I've done in my life or that we've done in our lives that, if viewed historically, would be seen as, you know, a bad thing to do to somebody. I think everybody has made bad choices. It's an interesting to take it into consideration and see what the scope of it is and whether or not that discounts what else they've done.
Oh, of course, yeah. I just love Tesla. I think he's an innovator. You know, I just want to give him the credit
where
credit is due.
Right.
And say Tesla was a hero. He was a fantastic guy.
Next week, Throwback Thursday is going to be on Nikola Tesla.
Exactly.
Will's going to submit a video from Europe just to talk about Nikola Tesla.
Amla has been paid off by Edison propaganda.
The Edison Foundation.
Yes. That's what they used to do. They literally did propaganda against Tesla, Edison's, but Anyway, no, I mean, it's a good Throwback Thursday.
Thank you.
You did a great job.
Yeah. So, but if anything, if you're going to focus on anything in regard to Thomas Edison, probably don't take inspiration from stealing people's work. And take inspiration from the fact that failure is not failure. It's actually a success. It's actually learning something about yourself, about the world, about the way the world works, and that you have never expended all of your possibilities. That's something that I would urge you to take away from this man. Right. And that's my Throwback Thursday.
Very good.
Thank you. I can feel the heat seething from Nikola Tesla, the soul of Nikola Tesla that's still in Will.
Listen, if we have any Croatians in this audience, they're going to have a word with you.
Guys, that is our show for today. I hope you enjoyed our Dr. Phil opening skit. We talked to Matt Walsh, and you got a Throwback Thursday. And is Nikola Tesla better than Thomas Edison? Possibly.
There's no possibility.
We'll have to go and we'll do a deep dive into that at a later date. Thank you so much for watching. And I hope that you're watching on the Will and Amala Live channel. That is our second channel now. We are streaming there and at PragerU, but eventually we'll be streaming exclusively on Will and Amala Live, that channel on YouTube. So look it up, subscribe to us there, enter the chat there. That's the chat that we'll be watching through the duration of our shows. And please like, subscribe, click the notification bell to be notified every single day when we go live. That is every weekday at 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern.
Thanks so much for watching. We're going to see you tomorrow. Bye, guys.